Death this year has taken men whose kind we shall not see again. Pride and skill and friendliness, wrath and wisdom and delight are shining still, but shining less and clouded to the common sight. Time will show them clear again. Time will give us other men with names to write in burning gold when they were great and we are old. But these were royal-hearted, rare. Memory keeps with loving care deeds they did and tales they told. But living men are hard to spare. Those words by Unitarian minister John Haynes Holmes apply to the loss we gather to memorialize this day. Jack Warren is one of those royal-hearted, rare men whose lives are hard to spare. On behalf of the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan, I welcome all of you here today, whatever your connection to Jack. Our religion is one of inclusion and welcome, and I hope you find that here this afternoon. It's fitting and appropriate that we gather here at the congregation Jack attended and supported for many years. He resonated with our commitment to reason and religion and loved to be part of the music. We gather today in solidarity with those who've known him longest, his cousins, Bill, Prudence, Susan, and Tom. And we welcome also their spouses and his nephew, Bill. And we keep in mind his sister in Pasadena, unable to attend, and his nephews, other people who aren't here. We recognize that his life touched so many people, teachers and students, colleagues and fellow musicians. Jack was a stalwart in the men's lunch group here for many years. And we have watched, saddened, as his Parkinson's progressed and he withdrew to the comfort of his room at Meadowlark Hills, where he kept his mind active, reading a wide assortment of books and magazines right up until the stroke that brought on his death. Always when you visited Jack, you would have a stimulating conversation. Those gathered here mourn his loss, for he meant something to all of us. For that reason, we are here today, to shed a tear perhaps, but more than that, to smile and remember and celebrate the life that Jack Warren lived upon this earth, to say our goodbyes to him, and to offer comfort to one another. We're thankful for the long, full life Jack lived and for knowing him. His sharp mind and amiability enriched our lives and gave a model for quality living. On this day of loss and celebration, may we recall our own mortality and rediscover the full meaning of our fleeting pleasures and the depth of love we feel for others until at length we grasp the great perspective of life wherein we find the joy of living. We mourn this death, but trust that love remains. Along with our memories and stories, they keep Jack alive for us. May the comfort we offer one another deepen our connections, and may his death bring us closer to healing the wounds of human frailty, helping us to realize the power and strength of life. Anyone who knows Jack also knows his deep attachment to music, singing in church choirs and barbershop groups, playing trumpet and flugelhorn and clarinet and saxophone wherever he could, as long as he could, and taking it seriously, pursuing lessons with experts. Not long before his death, the UUFM choir held a rehearsal out at Meadowlark where he lived and sang some with the Meadowlark choir, and he came and listened and watched. And the songs the choir presents this afternoon are two of the last songs Jack heard from them. So we're glad we had that final opportunity to entertain him. He looked happy that day. There was sweet music there, and indeed, there is here today too, sweet music in his honor. Because Jack's father and his five brothers were so close, the cousins felt like siblings, I've been told. His cousins will now offer remembrances from the family, followed by Jan Marks.
Good afternoon. I'm first cousin of Jack. Jack was the oldest cousin on my side of the family, my dad's side, and I was the youngest. So talking to my cousins here, they said I was the family historian. Well, I've taken an interest in genealogy and various things like that. And just to give you a background, I won't spend a lot of time on it, but the original Warrens came over in 1630 to Boston, Massachusetts. And for several generations, they lived in Boston, and they kept migrating out to the other side of the state over by Springfield, some of you know where that area is. And they settled in a town of Wilbraham. Anyhow, my grandfather, they went to school there, and all his siblings, and I was fortunate to have a lot of historians in the family, and Jack was one of them. And Jack was very proud of his heritage, and I wanted to emphasize that today, because he had so many stories to tell me, and phone calls back and forth. And have you ever heard Jack laugh? Yeah. I mean, infectious laugh, just break down. He spent a lot of time with me and the cousins. I didn't get to see him too often, but I got to know him better as I got older, and we were good friends. And he had a lot of stories on the Warrens. But I think he was a person who treated everybody the same, probably. He was, those of you know him, and he was that way, friendly, and he enjoyed people. We were glad to have Alice connect with him later on in life. That was a wonderful thing for both of them, and I appreciate that. But Jack, he just had so many stories about us, and being 20 years older than I was, you know, he took part of the Warren History Review much longer than I did, and he shared a lot of good things with me, and his music, his education, it was just a joy to be around, and a good friend, a good cousin, and I will definitely miss him. So I know he's in a better place now, so thank you.
We decided to go in terms of age, so that's why. So I'm Susan, and I'm...
Youngest.
Yes, he's the youngest. I'm the next. I'm the youngest girl. So, and I have just one story that I want to tell, because it was, my kids still talk about it, and it shows some of, when I was thinking about what adjective would I use to describe, and in the obituary is the word exuberant, and I thought, okay, that is absolutely it. And before I get that, I want to say thank you to the choir. That was lovely. That was, he would have loved that. Okay. When my oldest, who is now 37, was four, I brought my mother here to see Jack and Alice, and so I had a four-year-old and a one-year-old. And it was about the time of the Dukes of Hazzard. You all remember the Dukes of Hazzard? Well, my oldest was enamored of the Dukes of Hazzard. So he and Jack were discussing that. So we were here like 4 days, and Jack decided that they would be the Dukes of Hazzard. So every time they got in and out of the car, they did not open the doors. So, Jack, so when you're four, that's pretty easy. When you're 54, maybe not quite so easy. But it was, the kids still talk about how wonderful that was, and it's just an indication of what a great guy he was. And he was very special to all of us.
I'm not the oldest. And we have two Bills. We have Bill Penner, who's Jack's nephew, and we have Bill Warren, who's a cousin. And we are all first cousins. There were five boys in the Warren family that we are all children of. Four of them had children, and one of them did not have children, but we all knew him real well, and we called him Uncle Bob. And we have stayed close as a family. We all came here in the early 2000s for a reunion in Manhattan and had a wonderful time and have pictures. And we have brought a few pictures of the family. And ahead of that, in 1997, all the cousins were together in Fruita. And Fruita has become a resort destination, Fruita, Colorado, and it's west of Grand Junction, and we all get a kick out of that because it wasn't a resort when Jack or Barbara or any of us were there. But when I'm an only child, and so I thought I'd gone to Disneyland when I went to Fruita because I had six cousins. But when you spoke of Jack, I think that the word that I'm going to remember from this service is that Jack resonated. And he resonated if you were in the room with him or if you were on the phone. And I called him very frequently. That's a word that I think you could use to remember Jack. Also, we have all talked about, and Susan has said that, you know dates in our family by what car you were driving. And Jack carried on that principle of cars. And my dad was a car dealer. And I grew up knowing every model of car. And when I was 10, I could name the cars coming at you on a two-way highway faster than Jack. That was my claim, one of my big claims to fame. I can say Plymouth, Ford, Chevrolet faster than Jack. So, and I want you to also know that Jack was, as people have said and will say, wonderful storyteller. And we don't carry that on. You know, our children are texters. And we didn't text, and Jack certainly didn't text, and he could tell you a story about anything in any year, and he could always tell you what year it was. We're trying to groom Tom into that, but but he hasn't, you know, he's only had a couple, 3 weeks now. So, but you would say, do you remember? And Jack would say, well, in 1942. Da, 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 da. The other thing that was wonderful for me was I would say something about my dad. My dad's name was Frank, and he would say, let me tell you about 1948 in Denver. So that was, and those stories resonated. And it was just wonderful. And we all talked. The other stories he could tell for us were my dad took the movies for the family and the 8mm ones, you know. My dad would drive down the highway holding the movie camera. And Jack could tell you where he was driving, and Jack wasn't with them, but Jack had heard Dad tell that story, so those stories so often that he could tell you. And so I meant to get here and have him narrate the movies, but I didn't get it done. So close to the time that Jack passed away, Vin Scully retired from being the Dodgers announcer, and he'd been that for 67 years. And it was a big deal at the Dodgers game when he retired. And I have decided this is how I'm going to remember and deal with losing our friends and family. And that is, Vin Scully said, don't be sad because it's over. Smile because it happened. And I can't really smile that Jack happened and that I had that relationship. Thank you.
Being the oldest, I almost declared a privilege of being the oldest and not got up today. But one thing that when I came to visit Jack, we discussed something when I left. When Jack came over and got together with Alice, he became very frugal. It was always, he was flamboyant one time in his life with Buick convertibles and other things, but anyway, he would just said, Bill, that was in Metal Arc, and when they were home with Constant Care, he said, I don't think we're going to be able to afford this. And I said, well, I don't know what to say. And he said, do you think you could get me up to the Oddfellows home, O'Neill, Nebraska, I believe. And I said, well, I guess. And so the resolve was is for him to keep paying his dues. And so I was sitting here today about thinking of something to say. So, Jack, you don't have to pay the dues.
I'm going to jump in here. It wasn't planned, but I'm Jack's nephew, Bill. My mom is Jack's sister, and she's in Pasadena. She couldn't make it. She's not really traveling very well. But what I wanted to say is, it's been really beautiful being out here. And I'm an architect, and my great grandfather was an architect. So this was Jack's grandfather. And over the last couple of years, I've been back in touch with Jack a little bit more on the phone about my great-grandfather, because it was a connection to me that, in a funny way, that I didn't really pursue so much. And it turns out that my great-grandfather was in Colorado Springs and then moved to Los Angeles and Pasadena. And my mom's out in Pasadena now, and my brother as well. And it was kind of an interesting conversation because we were talking about history, and Jack is really the one to remember those things, you know, and really with incredible specificity that, you know, it was just nice. And I'm glad you're taking on that because you're going to get a phone call. But one of the things I wanted to say, and I wanted to actually say this to Alice's family too, is, you know, one of the things I remember about Jack is that I live in New York, and we would have these conversations and on the phone, and I would get them at my birthday and other times, and it was kind of like I would call Jack, and he said, "Well, let me get Alice on the phone," and so we would have this kind of conference call in a way. And what was really nice about it was I always remember them being so interested in what I was doing. And, you know, to Alice's family, to particularly Alice, I mean, you know, Bill, how are you doing? You know, how's work? How's this? How's this? But it was really genuine, and I really appreciated that, because it's not so easy to have these conversations, and I know that I fall into this, you know, talking about myself and all this other business. And that was one of the things I really appreciated, and I was thinking about it today, you know, and, you know, also just these conversations, just that intimacy that way was really very helpful. And for Alice's family, you know, Alice just was amazing with that. You know, she's just was really very helpful. And I know that relationship with Jack was something that really kind of focused him for that last, you know, those last section of his life. So it was a nice memory. So thank you very much. It's nice. It's nice to meet the people I haven't met, and I'm sure we'll talk a little bit later. Thank you.
This is not planned at all, so I'm a little nervous. But I just couldn't pass up the opportunity to just kind of speak on behalf of Alice, and I'm ashamed to say that I'm not prepared. But she would have been so touched by this. And the way they grafted their lives together at that point was a beautiful thing. And I believe they really were just such a gift to each other. And we're so thankful that they had each other. They brought so much joy into one another's lives. And it was a beautiful, beautiful thing. And we're thankful for it. We're just really, I know she would be just so touched by seeing all of his friends and family here and just a celebration. Thank you. God bless.
Well, I'm Jan Marks, CPA and trustee for Jack and Alice, so I'm sort of their hand-picked family. Alice started working with our firm, Varney & Associates, here in Manhattan, about the same time our founder, Bill Varney, started the firm. So that would have been about 60 years ago. Alice was very loyal, and Jack became the same way. And when Bill transitioned the account to me, I had their complete confidence. In their mind, if Bill Varney thought I could do it, they thought I could do it. So what I remember most about Jack and Alice when I first started working with them was I kind of thought Jack was just showing up because he was their driver, or her driver. Well, I learned pretty quickly in the meetings, they were both very astute business people, and I learned very quickly in the meetings that Alice wanted to be in control. Jack let her have her say, but he was very instrumental, and she always looked to him for advice. And together, you can imagine, they wanted to make the most money and pay the least amount of tax. And they both had ideas on how to do that. I'll have to say Jack's were a little more creative than Alice's. But the really neat thing to me was they were truly a team. They did everything together. And they were always very respectful of each other. I knew they met later in life, and then I met them in the latter part of their life, and they were very much a team. When Jack fell ill a few years back, Alice asked me to come to their home for that meeting to go over their taxes, and when we were done, she said, "I have something more important to tell you." Let me back up just a little bit. I don't normally serve as trustee. It's very rare. But when Jack and Alice sat across from my desk and said, "We don't have children, and we don't have family nearby, and we want you to be our trustee." And I said, "Well, I'm very honored, but I don't normally take on that role." And together they said, "Please." And I said, "But it feels like the right thing to do." So I'm honored. I'm honored that I had that opportunity. But when Jack fell ill a few years ago, Alice wanted me to come to their home, sit at their kitchen table, and she said, "Of all the things you've ever done for us, I want you to know the most important thing to me right now is that Jack is always taken care of. I want 24-hour help here at home. I want everything he could ever need." And she held true to that. And fortunately, they had the means for that. They had 24-hour care and got wonderful care. Their home health care workers I'm not sure anybody's here, but they were gems. Well, Alice would sort of run off the ones that weren't. And they were gems. But then when Alice got frail, Jack said the same thing to me. He said, now there's nothing more important. I don't know if we can afford this. That became his biggest concern. But I want to make sure Alice is taken care of. So it was really wonderful to be able to help coordinate that. And I also know they cared very much for their families. They would talk about you from time to time. And Bill's name kept coming up. Well, I didn't realize for a while, there's three of you. There's cousin Bill Warren, who I know he was very close to. There's nephew Bill Olson, and you visited quite often. And there's nephew Bill Penner, and he shined when he would talk about you, Bill. So what a tribute to have all three Bills here for his service. Well, when Jack kept his sharp memory, and he had an incredible memory. I'd look up once in a while if he'd state something they did a few years ago. I'd have to look it up after he left. He was always right. But he was also pretty witty. And after Alice died and we went to Meadowlark, which was his request, Alice would have liked to have kept him home. But his request was to go to Meadowlark, and I think it was because he was social, and it made him very happy to know. And when he asked me once a week, can we afford this, I said, yes, it's fine, Jack. But I remember that when we were going through the assessment there, it's a cognitive test, and it's kind of a battery of questions. You're kind of exhausted when you're done, but he did pretty well, but at the end, the test was a question to write a complete sentence on any topic of his choice. He picked up that pen and quickly wrote, I am capable. He had the nurses laugh and he had everybody laughing. So it's pretty easy to see what a capable guy he was. In his music talent, in his that stack of diplomas, oh my goodness. I've never known anyone with that many diplomas. And a lot of memberships and friendships. So yes, he was very capable, and I'm very honored to be his trustee and CPA. Now, I have a letter from a friend who actually worked with Jack, Lisa Burgess, at my office. I'll just finish with that if you don't mind. Lisa was Alice and Jack's property manager. They had a farm, a rental, and she helped with the personal property too, but she developed a real friendship with Jack because she loved music too. So here's what Lisa had to say. She would have loved to have been here today, but she drove her elderly parents to another event. It continues to amaze me, these children of the Depression and World War II era, what they've been through during their lifetime, and what they've left behind to tell us the stories that we never knew. In going through Jack's belongings, and she did help me go through all the personal property and all of his letters, and Jack didn't throw a lot away. I find that John Thomas Warren, or Jack, as we came to know him, was a man of many hats. Hat number one. This is finance at an early age. His financial economic savvy started in childhood at the age of 8 with a rotary printing press that he received from Christmas. So soon hot off the press is Nosy News, describing the life of an 8-year-old, all for a penny an issue. It was published for 5 years. His subscription base at last publication was 48, and it included the Beatrice National Bank. Weekly happenings, these were hilarious. When we found this, we had to read them all. But weekly happenings were usually about grandparents' visits, how cold and how much snow there was, the schoolyard fights, And they were behind the schoolyard, and it cost a penny to watch them. He even wrote about the war. He was the general manager and editor. Remember, this guy's 8 years old, okay? He signs it this way. Sister Barbara and friend Roger Oldfather were reporters. Okay, hat number two is music. His love for music must have developed at an early age, probably listening to the radio. His vast array of music chronicles from obscure polka bands of Nebraska. We have tubs of music from Jack, just tubs of music. So, yes, there's a Lawrence Welk album in there. There's jazz legends Ellington and Basie, I'm probably saying that wrong, along with the 50s crooners Crosby, Bennett, and Sinatra. He was thrilled at Christmas when he received a CD of smooth jazz Christmas music, and that was last Christmas. He listened intently, marveled at the quality of the unknown performers, and discussed their technique and range. Was that an alto or a soprano saxophone? He just wouldn't stop talking about it. Hat number three, cars. Jack's other passion was cars. His VW Bug, you probably remember that, and the 2002 Pontiac Trans Am convertible. He loved to drive it, and when he was no longer able to drive, he would have a companion from Metal Arc drive him over to the house, and he'd have Lisa back it out of the garage and let him listen to it. When the weather was nice, Lisa would actually drive it to Metal Arc and pick him up, and they'd go for a drive. He absolutely loved that. And she was so kind. She was happy to do whatever made him happy. Last Thanksgiving, his hat number four came off, and that's never knew a stranger. She invited him to her house for Thanksgiving. But she said her father was very, very nervous because what do you say to a man with two PhDs? How do you carry on a conversation? It didn't take long when the two of them were discussing pipelining in Nebraska and Kansas because Lisa's dad had worked for the same company as Jack's father. And she said basically they never stopped talking. So, Jack, you have many hats, engineer, Air Force captain, professor, realtor, photographer, but the best hat you have ever worn is that of a friend, Lisa Burgess. I better not take yours, huh? Thank you. Thank you.
One of my responsibilities was to solicit comments from Jack's friends and colleagues, and I will share some of those with you. Patrick Gormley from the Economics Department wrote about how much fun it was to have him around Waters Hall. I recall once when he was sitting in on my international economics class, I was asked a question I couldn't answer and asked Jack to help me out, and he was able to do so. Ed Olson, another one of our colleagues, taught Jack managerial economics and history of economic thought. Because his son's getting married today in Washington, D.C., he couldn't be here. I will always remember him as a man with a deep and resonant, there's that word, a resonant voice, expressing humor and good sense. Steve Kasu was his teacher in maybe the hardest course in the K-State PhD economics curriculum, Advanced in Macroeconomic Theory. He wrote this: Jack enjoyed an unusual combination of grace, curiosity, and friendliness. He was always upbeat and always had something to say. He worked as a conversational leader and middleman, including everyone in the conversation and learning new details about people to share with others at a later time. A true gentleman who will be missed. Craig Barker. Parker was Jack's trumpet teacher for many years. He's in Arkansas today for a board meeting of the College of Music Society. Couldn't be here. So sorry I can't be there to celebrate the life of one of the most interesting and multi-talented men I have ever known. Finally, this from Dennis Weissman, who guided Jack's study of government regulation of business and wrote a few thoughts about him. I was a newly minted PhD teaching my first graduate course when I met Jack Warren. He was then in his early 60s, pursuing a second doctorate. I did not know it at the time, but Jack's insatiable intellectual curiosity and penchant for asking incisive questions would make me a better teacher and his classmates better economists. Jack would frequently stop by my office announcing his arrival with, "Hey, what are you up working on?" Jack was a passionate, lifelong learner. We would discuss economics, and he would regale me with stories about American iron, Jack's term for American automobiles. And, of course, his former employer, about whom you'll hear more later, Bell and Howell. I looked forward to Jack's visits, and he always left me with a warm smile on my face. Jack and I shared a love of cars. On many a Saturday afternoon, I would be tinkering in the garage only to hear the rumble of Jack's Trans Am convertible muscling up the street. He would wheel the big V8 into the driveway before peeking his white mane at the top and inquiring, "Hey man, want to go for a ride?" Jack backed out of the driveway, turned to me, and announced with his famous impish grin, "Let's annoy your neighbors," before burning rubber halfway down the street. These rides were always exhilarating. They were and frequently life-threatening, as Jack he regularly ignored the speed limits, contending that they were just recommendations, and delighted in sliding around the gravel-filled turns as we blazed through the lush countryside of the Kansas Flint Hills. I don't know much about Jack's faith, but I do know that driving with him certainly tested mine. Jack was a cherished friend and a colleague, and my life was richer because he was part of it. Happy trails, Jack. Well, I get to tell some stories, too. As I laid out the pictures in the out there in the lobby, did anybody ever see a picture of Jack when he wasn't either smiling or having a musical instrument in his mouth? I can't think of a time. For over 70 years, Jack has been a person of interest in my family. We met when I was three, I think, and he and my older brother Jack were sixth graders at Fairview Elementary School in Beatrice, Nebraska. And as I was putting this together, I thought of several things. One is that it's kind of a mixed blessing to have a friend with an eidetic memory and hear your words repeated to you that you spoke 20 years earlier and had wished you had forgotten. Well, two stories. Shortly after Jack finished his PhD in higher ed administration at the University of Illinois, he took a job as the vice president for research at the Bell and Howell Schools. And his big project for them was to take a careful census of graduates of the Bell and Howell various colleges. And when he got done and handed it to the president said, well, this is not very flattering. We have to change it. Well, he said, they're numbers. You don't change numbers. They persist. And the president said, well, either you significantly modify this or you're fired. Well, that was his last day on the job. A couple years later, the Federal Trade Commission encouraged the company to close its remote learning programs and establish a fund to pay students who are unable to use their training to find jobs. Here's a postscript. This last summer, Bell and Howell's DeVry University was sued by the Federal Trade Commission in behalf of a large number of students whose experiences matched those Jack discovered decades earlier. In 1989, close to the 40th anniversary of Jack's graduating class and my brother's class, my brother died of a malignant brain tumor. Jack asked, is there anything I can do? And I said, well, would you be a pallbearer? And he said, sure. And then, unbeknownst to me or my family, he got on the phone and tracked down several of their friends that they had grown up with and who had not seen much of each other or Jack or my brother Roger for almost 40 years, and they came as pallbearers. Going to a son's or a child's funeral is a very difficult thing for parents. Jack, one of the highlights for my parents, though, and the gratitude they felt was for Jack's ability to get these several tall, nice-looking, nearly 60-year-old men who were having a good time seeing each other and doing their job for a classmate. And my parents were very grateful to Jack for doing this. During the six-day vigil after Jack's stroke, Jan Marks and I speculated on what Jack's wishes for paradise might be. And we agreed music would be a part of it, and concerts too. But as I thought about it, I thought perhaps he would be in the market for seminars. Jack loved to go to some place where ideas were discussed, where arguments, civilized arguments occurred, and where there were efforts to spin out the truth. And I can see him in several of these places. He just beamed the whole time such a thing was going on. So here's what I think might happen to Jack in paradise, and that is that if there were a really good concert, maybe maybe Benny Goodman on clarinet, Charlie Parker on sax, or Duke Ellington's orchestra, he would consider going there rather than to a place where ideas were being discussed. 30 years ago, when Kathleen and I moved here, it was a very pleasant surprise to find out that Jack Warren was here too. And we started going to lunch together and doing other things. And I had no idea of how much time out of this is that this past 60 or 33 years he and I would have spent together, on how rewarding those hours would be. This is related to something that was said earlier. I don't think I ever had a conversation with him without his asking about my three children. What are they up to? What are they doing? And without being able to remember exactly what I told him the last time he asked the question. His passing leaves a very big vacancy to fill in my life. I'll miss him. There's an opportunity if people would like to speak. The microphone will circulate through the audience. If you want to say something about Jack, this would be a good time to do it.
I'm Bryce Hobronk, a member of the men's group here, and that was my main contact with Jack. Although, in talking about the past, I believe that we probably overlapped about 1960 here in Manhattan. He was spending a summer in the physics department here when he was working on his master's degree in physics, and I was at the other end of the building, and I'm plumbing my memory for someone who stood out, and I think it's there, but I'm not sure. What the family has said about resonating means a whole lot, because that was a word that I was looking for as well, there is such a thing in physics or metaphysics that is known as the law of conservation of memory. And that's no joke. Just as there is a law of conservation of matter and energy, the record of one's existence here on Earth somehow exists in the electromagnetic spectrum that's bouncing around out there. And some physicists believe that that's true, except when it is absorbed into a black hole. Well, Stephen Hawking says that's not true. He's explained how memory is conserved even on the edges of a black hole. So, Jack's contributions on this Earth, I'm sure, are bouncing around out there somewhere in space. You just can't pass it up. Jack was a smart man. I was tempted to call him a polymath, which is good at everything, but I struggled to find any evidence of his abilities in the arts or in athletics, particularly not athletics. But he really knew a lot. I learned to know him best in a writer's group, one here at the church run by Charlie Kempthorne and Barbara Bascom. And I probably learned more about him and learned to respect him more based on that than almost anything. Because Jack didn't talk much about himself. He wasn't interested in drawing attention to himself and who he was and what he had done. Repeating the inadvertent pun from Wednesday at the cemetery, Jack didn't toot his own horn, except if it had keys or valves. But you can learn a great deal about a person on what they write. And what resonated here was what the family has said about Fruta. Jack wrote a lot about Fruta. His family's car journeys to Fruta to see all the other members of the family. And even though I have discarded everything that he passed around that he had written, I suggest that if he had a computer, look on the hard drive, because you'll probably find those stories there. The writing was beautiful. I love writing, good writing, and you know it when you see it. And Jack wrote good stuff. He could express himself in writing in a way that most of us can't. So I just think about Jack floating around out there on the edges of a black hole, and we'll miss him a great deal.
Mark Mayfield. I was finance chair here for quite a while, And the one thing that the one interface that came across my plate with Jack was that he never would pledge anything, but he was always a very dependable giver, and so and a very good one. So you can see a lot of the his giving is certainly here in this fellowship. So in the financial sense, as well as what he gave in other ways to everybody around here.
Yeah, just to say how grateful I was to be able to play music with Jack on the saxophone and just anything. And Michael and others were involved in that. And everything that's been said about how he would just help you or want to know how you're doing. And it's true in the music, too. He just shared so much with that. I'm just really grateful that we were able to do that.
Yeah. My name is Yang Ming Chen, and I'm a professor in economics at K-State. Jack took graduate courses from me, so actually I know Jack very well. You know, on the first day of my class in math econ, that is a course that required the use of math in economics, I saw a middle-aged student in my class. I was telling myself, maybe this is not the room for him. So after class, I told him, are you sure you are in the right room? And then he told me that, I'm interested in math econ. And I want to get a PhD in economics. And I was so surprised. And actually, you know, after that, whenever I had questions, I answered questions, you know, whenever I have answers to students' questions, I look at Jack and to see what he would react, and he was knocking his head, you know. So that gave me a confidence, and that was his first year of PhD study in economics. In the second year, he took another required course in microeconomics, and he continued to do well. He ranked among the top in the class. 2 years after he had finished all coursework, he decided to work, a research project with me, and we worked so hard to get it published in a journal, and that was an achievement to PhD students at age 65 or 66, and he worked as a role model to his classmates at age 30s, maybe 20s, 30s, And it's, as far as I know, he provide his home as the center of graduate students. Many graduates were from out of state, and he was very supportive. Jake was a good friend, and he had a passion for economic research, and I enjoyed Jake very much, and. I miss Jack very much. Actually, after he finished his degree, we went out for lunch many years before Christmas, and we enjoy our friendship. And I still have one painting and one poster in my office that I borrowed from Jack, so probably I'll hang there. As long as I'm at K-State. Yeah, I miss Jack.
I'm Ken Embers. Jack and I had a couple of we shared some experience together. After I was here at the fellowship for a couple of years, I was happy to discover that Jack and I were fraternity brothers. He was a few years older than I, and he went to the University of Nebraska, but we both pledged the same fraternity. And so once we found that out, Jack was just elated because he was really proud about being a member of this fraternity, whereas I had kind of been a fraternity member and then forgotten it for a number of years. But as we came together, he always called me bro because we were brothers then. And every time he'd see me, he'd say, "Hey, bro," and give me the secret handshake. And then we'd talk about different things. And we had this great relationship all because we were members of Delta fraternity. And when he got older and he was at Metal Ark Hills, and I'd go and visit him at sometimes I'd go before we had a men's meeting here that he started. But instead of coming here, I would go visit him at the Wharton House, and we would talk, and I'd take him the Rainbow magazine of Delta Tau Delta, and he loved to read the articles, and we would talk about what we did in the fraternity, and sometimes he would bring up the songs that we used to sing at the meals, and Jack would I would be in his room, and we'd be singing, "We are, we are, we are, we are the men of Delta Tau," and we would laugh, and we'd talk about these things, you know, and people would look in like, "What are these guys doing in here, laughing and singing?" And so we just had a great time, and then Jack would go on and sing some other songs. And there were a number of, let's say, after-hour songs that you would sing at Beer Bus. And Jack knew all the words to these ribald, politically incorrect songs. And it just cracked me up, ones I'd never even heard. But he remembered them all. And that was really so good. And we had such a great time together. And the other thing we shared was that Jack was a captain in the Air Force. And I was a captain in Army Aviation in the military. And I put a Vietnam veterans tag on my car, and everyone, you know, especially during Vietnam at the end, we weren't heroes at that time, you know. But when Jack saw that on there, he gave me the thumbs up as a brother that we'd shared and served in the military service for our country, and I always appreciated that.
My name is Alfred Cochran. Jack was a student of mine for many years and a very good friend. My father told me many years ago, he said, "Son, if you go through your life and you can count the number of close friends that you have on one hand, you'll be a lucky man." And I said, "Daddy, what are you talking about? I've got lots and lots of friends." He said, "Well, let it play out and you'll see." And he's right. Jack was a very close friend of mine. And I'd like to tell you why. Jack was, as you know, a very complex person, as are we all. He had a public side to him, which he projected, and he had a very private side. And one of the beauties of our friendship is that he opened up the dark side of his life to me, the happy side, the bright side, and all of the myriad gradations in between. And that's rare. You don't find that very much. Every time I was with Jack, and I cannot tell you how many hundreds of times that would have been, we always laughed. There was never, ever one word of discord that passed between us. And in many ways, we were very different. We didn't agree on a lot of things. And I think that was one of the special things about our friendship, because he could tell me the most intimate things, and he knew that there would be no judgment, and that we could have a good conversation that would be uplifting for both of us. I think that's incredibly special. So when Michael asked me to play today, I thought about all of our associations, and Jack knew all of my children. They were all close to him. They all visited him with me through the years, and there's a little allusion in what I'm going to play to a very arcane tune that only Jack would have known from the 1930s. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
The poet Christina Rossetti wrote, "Remember me when I'm gone away, gone far away into the silent land, when you can no longer hold me by the hand, nor I half turn to go, yet turning stay. Remember me when no more day by day you tell me of our future that you'd planned. Only remember me, only you understand it will be late to counsel then or pray. Yet if you should forget me for a while and afterward remember, do not grieve. For if the darkness and corruption leave a vestige of the thoughts that once I had, better by far that you should forget and smile than that you should remember and be sad." Jack lived a long, rich life. He married later in life, but had more than 3 decades with his beloved wife, Alice, who died less than 2 years ago. He served in many roles in his 8 decades, from captain in the Air Force to engineer to college administrator to real estate broker. He collected degrees like some of us collect keychains or shoes. Bachelor's in electrical engineering, master's in physics, PhDs in higher education administration and economics. Filled with curiosity, his pursuit of education never ended, whether formal or informal. He sought to understand life, to put the puzzle together with knowledge from different disciplines, and to learn from everyone he met. Of course, he also had some of those guy interests, like cars with big motors. And connecting with other men mattered to him, as shown by his devotion to his fraternity, Delta Tau Delta, and the commitment to our men's group. His passion for music evidenced a love of beauty and an attraction to creating beauty, which he did through playing and singing. It's not enough to observe the beautiful. Being part of it not only intensifies the appreciation, but also connects us with others through the making of harmony, demonstrating multiplicity and unity at the same moment of time. Every unique individual that we love, and no one could have been more unique than Jack, offers us a lesson or two to live on. And Jack invites us to have curiosity and intellectual depth, to connect with others in an authentic way, and to appreciate the beauty of a sound argument as much as a harmonic 7th chord. Jack was ready in a moment to help others, extending himself through teaching, and his life made a difference just for so many others. D.H. Lawrence wrote, "When the ripe fruit falls, its sweetness distills and trickles away into the veins of the earth. When fulfilled people die, the essential oil of their experience enters the veins of living space and adds a glisten to the atom, to the body of immortal chaos. For space is alive and it stirs like a swan whose feathers glisten silky with the oil of distilled experience." I like to think that the oil of Jack's experience has distilled and spread into us, yes, but more into the aliveness of space. Or in a more traditional image, that he has gone over home.
Thank you.
They should sit. They should sit. I cannot claim to know whether death brings us over home. I can affirm that we grant Jack eternal life by carrying his spirit with us from this day forth. We bid farewell to him now, letting go of his exuberant spirit, his ready helpfulness, his sharp, incredibly sharp mind, his commitment to beautiful music. His time had come. Death ends a life, but it does not end the connections made through life. Death is not an end to love. Our love does not end, and our need for love from one another is boundless. We can strive to ready ourselves for mortality by taking the lessons of his life seriously. The words of Dorothy Munro, "Death is not too high a price to pay for having lived. Mountains never die, nor do the seas or rocks or endless sky. Through countless centuries of time, they stay eternal, deathless, yet they never live. If choice there were, I would not hesitate to choose mortality. Whatever fate demanded in return for life, I'd give, for never to have seen the fertile plains, nor heard the winds, nor felt the warm sun on sands beside the salty sea, nor touched the hands of those I love. Without these, all the gains of timelessness would not be worth one day of living and loving, come what may." Amen. Everyone is invited to share in a reception that's down the hall to the left in the Alsop room. Thank you.